Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. What does the government do? It takes small problems and makes them into big problems. It takes drug use, which is relatively a small problem, and turns it into a huge national catastrophe in the form of the war on drugs, something that's created violent cartels, that increases street violence, something that's destroyed families by locking up so many mothers and fathers. But what the Libertarian Party is working to do is taking some of those big problems and making them smaller. Today I have Chris Dock. He's the state chair of the Minnesota Libertarian Party, and in Minnesota, they're working right now to find different ways to downsize government to make the lives of people in Minnesota, and by example, the lives of people everywhere else in the country, a little bit better. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, when we look at the just small problems that the government has made catastrophically huge, to me, the biggest one, the first one that comes to mind, is education. It's important that people become educated, but what the government has done to education is just catastrophic. What is going on right now in Minnesota in terms of education?
You know, the timing of that question is fantastic, because we just closed our budget negotiation process on Monday night. Of course, they had until midnight, and I think it was at actually 12:01 a.m. that they finally signed the agreement, shipped it up to the governor's desk, but he's going to veto it because there's only $400 million of spending increases for education in that, and that doesn't include what he wants, which is free preschool for four-year-olds, which is an extra $125 million. So one of the things that we've been trying to push within Minnesota is that educational choice is what's important. You can't just continue to spend money on programs that don't work and expect the outcome to be different. So we've got a lot of activity in the state as far as the Common Core requirements and what does that really mean. And, you know, if a parent thinks that Common Core is what is best for their child, that's great. If they can send them to a school that utilizes Common Core, I'm all for that. But we don't have the option in Minnesota to say, hey, that's, I don't like the programs that you're putting our children through, and I want to put my children somewhere else. You can obviously do that through private school, but if a private school is going to cost $15,000, there's no voucher from the government, there's no offset from the government. So even though you're paying into the system for the education, if you want to opt out and take your child somewhere else, you've got to foot the entire bill. So, and right now in Minneapolis, for example, they spend over $20,000 per year per student. A great private school might cost $12,000, and the educational outcomes are vastly different. So it's obvious that the amount of money that's spent doesn't guarantee a great outcome, but that seems to be the approach that our current government is using. Is, if it's not working at $20,000 per student, maybe it'll work at $25,000 per student. So that's one of the things that we're really struggling with right now within the state. So,
you know, working in education myself, you know, one of the stories that always strikes me, you know, when I talk to different people about their own educational experiences, one of the people who I've met that is one of the most educated people I've ever met went to a school where the annual budget was, I don't know, basically zero, barely any electricity or running water. All they had was, you know, a bunch of Shakespeare plays and a copy of the Oxford English Dictionary. Suffice to say, he has a pretty huge vocabulary. And it's in education, more than almost in any other area, cost and quality have just nothing to do with each other. Even right now, with the government interference in the private sector, you have private education companies that are offering education for $100 or $200 a month. You have private education companies like Khan Academy and Coursera that are offering education for free. And the government continues to persist in this bizarre mythology that says without the government, people wouldn't have access to education. I mean, that's not just I mean, it's not like libertarians are saying, you know, there's this distant utopia. We're talking about right now. Right mm-hmm. now, we have affordable education in the private sector. Today, we have free education in the private sector. What is it going to – I mean, what if – has the Minnesota LP found any ways or is that idea gaining any traction that we already have free education so we don't need more bad free education?
You know, it's an interesting thing because as the spending goes up and people are now starting to see the outcomes come down, and as an example, with the $400 million budget increase for educational spending, in that same bill was lowering the requirements for standardized testing for a school to meet the requirement of a successful outcome. So while they, in the same breath as they're adding money, they are lowering the outcomes just in writing to say, we're expecting lower outcomes, but we need the extra $400 million. The other thing is that, again, I refer back to the age four preschool for $125 million. There's a price tag attached to that. That's just base funding that doesn't accommodate, okay, from a logistics perspective, where are we going to have these children sit? How are they going to get to school? If it's a half-day program, how do the parents manage that as far as getting the child to and from? And is there mm-hmm. a parent at home then, since it's not all-day fourth grade preschool? How are they going to manage that? How does that make it better for a family? And I guess the other thing is that we've got studies that have proven that by third grade, any increase in performance that you've got from a preschool program has faded away and everybody's on equal footing. So, again, we look in Minnesota, our discussions have been to say, you know, a senior high graduation diploma doesn't prepare you for something in Minnesota. And the reason that we know that is because the state is saying, everybody needs to have the opportunity to go to post-secondary education. So they're saying right out front, graduating from high school doesn't get you that much. It's just a stepping stone to get you into a college. And then 70% of the people at state schools and community colleges need remedial help with math and English to get them to mm-hmm. the point where we would have expected that they would be when they graduated from high school. So I guess our perspective would be, is exactly as you said, in the free market, there are opportunities to get quality education for a fraction of the price. But if we are going to be spending this money through the government programs, we should be demanding a better outcome. And instead of spending more money on the front end for the four-year-olds and then mandating that the government pick up the price tag for people to go to post-secondary, why don't we make – well, we've got those kids for 13 years already. Why can't we have a better outcome at that point? So mm-hmm. Our first push is to say it's choice and let the parents go choose a free market solution over the government schools. But then while the government schools are still operating, we need a much better outcome for our investment there.
Let's talk about some of the – I mean Minnesota has in the past, you know, in the last few years, actually managed to have some small improvements, if you want to call them that. You know, Minnesota had the dubious distinction of being one of the only states that literally banned Coursera, literally said that you are not allowed to take free online classes in Minnesota. It wasn't something that was particularly enforced, but this ban was actually overturned in 2012. Now, do you think, I mean, what do you think is the next transitional process? I mean, do you think that, for example, if we say to any parent that doesn't have their kids in a public school or any parent that just doesn't have kids at all, give everybody that's not using the public school system a tax, some kind of a tax rebate, do you think that would be the first step or something else?
Yeah, and again, it comes down to choice. Mm-hmm. And so one of the pushbacks that we get from the supporters of the government schools is that if we allow people to opt out, the government schools will crumble because they'll lose all of their enrollment. To me, that's proving the point. Is that you're saying if you give people a chance to get out, they'll take it. That's basically from a free market perspective, you're saying that your product isn't very good. So you're going to mm-hmm. mandate that people use your product because you know that if they have the choice that they won't. So like I said, kind of the upside and the downside of where we're headed in this crazy direction is that the spending keeps going up and the outcomes keep going down. And it's really starting to get in front of people that it was kind of an assumption, you know, when I was a kid, you just went to public school and public schools were great and you didn't really think about it because you didn't hear all these extravagant spending programs and waste programs. And mm-hmm. we had what we thought at the time were good outcomes. Now it's much more on people's minds. So I think it's an opportunity for us to say, hey, let's look at what we've done in the last 30 years. We've tripled the per capita spending, and that's taking inflation into account. It's tripled in constant dollars. And we all mm-hmm. know that the outcomes are going down because we're saying that a high school diploma doesn't do any good for you other than being a stepping stone to the next level of education. So like I said, kind of the upside for us as libertarians is we've been talking for the last 40 years in Minnesota that private education, you know, free market education should be out there. People are starting to take a look at that and say, yep, the last 40 years of government education are heading us in the wrong direction, so maybe we should consider some of those options.
And we've, I mean, one of the biggest areas where we've seen this is the homeschool revolution. I mean, to me, when we have, you know, almost 2 million people homeschooling their kids, what does that say? I mean, to me, that's the equivalent that of if I said, listen, I'm just tired of these potholes in the road. I'm just going to do it myself. I don't have any skill in road work. I don't know how to do it, but I can do it better than these guys. And we're seeing the same thing in homeschooling. We're seeing so many people saying, listen, I might not know a lot about teaching, but I definitely am going to do a better job than these guys. And we're seeing that transition happening. Let's take a break, and we'll, right after this, I want to talk about some of the other areas of what's going on in Minnesota, different ways that we can get the state out of the way of individual choice and individual excellence. Right now, we're talking with Chris Dock. He is the state chair of the Libertarian Party of Minnesota. Chris, what is the best website for you guys?
Our website is lpmn.org.
Okay, lpmn.org.
Information. Yep. So lpmn.org.
Now, state chairs like Chris do a lot of work in the party. They're some of the hardest working people in the party, but they can't cut government all by themselves. They need your help. If you want to get involved right now in a libertarian campaign or in a libertarian or in libertarian activism in your state, go to lp.org/states, and you can see how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. You might volunteer on Facebook, you might go door to door, you might work at booths. In fact, you might even decide to run for office. But the first step is going to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety. Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Right now, we're talking with Chris Duck. He's a state chair of the Libertarian Party of Minnesota. Chris, what are some of the other areas right now in Minnesota that are that need to be just decreased in terms of their spending or interference?
You know, transportation is a huge issue for us right now. We have a very aggressive light rail transit program being rolled out. That's actually controlled by the Met Council, which is an unelected entity within the metro area that has the ability to assess taxation and to spend money and to demand funding, but they aren't elected officials. So they operate a little bit behind the scenes, and they have a 40-year plan on how to remake our metro area into a high-density, no cars, all public transportation type of utopia. Not our utopia, of course. So right now, the next line of this rail system is 16 miles at a cost of $2 billion. And it goes to one of the more affluent suburbs of Minneapolis, which is Eden Prairie, and then makes stops along the way at a handful of other suburbs. Obviously, a lot of payoff being done there to get the stations in your town, and the people who are real close to those stations love that. So if you are a convenience store that's right next to the station, that's fantastic. If you're a convenience store that's six blocks away, that's too bad. But the interesting thing is that we have a very highly functional bus line that goes from Eden Prairie to downtown already. It's actually, they've got brand new buses, they've got Wi-Fi, they've got a palatial parking garage where you go for the park and ride. So there's no difficulty in getting from Eden Prairie to downtown. What we don't have is a line that kind of forces you to go town to town and take an hour to take this 20-minute trip and stop at the different cities. Again, this fits into the overall view of high-density housing along this rail line and then the ability for people to move across the city without needing a car, because we want to have a car-free society at some point 40 years in the future is the vision. So interestingly enough, we also have a $2 billion surplus in our state budget right now. Of course, we know that that means that they've overtaxed us. They're looking at that they've underspent. So they're not even looking at, so, and then the flip side is there's a $6 to $10 billion kind of expectation of what we're going to need for roads and bridges over the next 20 years. So you kind of take these three pieces and say, okay, if you need minimum $6 billion to fix the roads and bridges, we're spending $2 billion on light rail that could be allocated over to that. And I know it's a complex equation because some of the money comes from the federal government. And heaven forbid that we don't spend money that the government, that the federal government would subsidize. But the vast majority of that money is coming from states, local, and county governments. But then the $2 billion surplus, they're looking for pet projects to spend that money on. If they're going to spend the $2 billion, I'd rather have them mark down the $6 billion to $4 and spend it on the roads and bridges. Our governor actually, one of his quotes when they were talking about the $2 billion surplus is, every morning he wakes up and he feels like a kid on Christmas Day because he's trying to imagine what he can spend this money on. What kind of dream projects can he spend this on? So we've got kind of this runaway train of, it's kind of like I would equate it to, if I knew I had to fix my roof and it was going to cost $10,000, if I inherited $5,000, I wouldn't spend it on a worldwide cruise and then say, hey, where am I going to come up with the $10,000 for my roof? I would put that money and say, okay, now I've got half of it. Where do I come up with the other half? But our government just doesn't do that. They see the surplus as something they need to spend. And then let's start from scratch and figure out where we can get the $6 billion to pay for the roads and bridges. And, oh, by the way, that's a gasoline tax. That's raised income taxes. That's all additional taxation that doesn't exist right now.
And this is an important point because right now, let's say right now there's a Libertarian governor in Minnesota who just had no interest in even doing anything at all. Let's say he was like the worst Libertarian governor. We would already have an additional $2 billion of either tax cuts or preventing future spending increases. But if we had what we actually have, which is Libertarians that are hardworking, working hard to downsize spending and get the government out of the way, that could be a very significant tax cut for every single person in Minnesota. I mean, that's a thing that could have – that's not some pipe dream. That's something that we would have had right now in Minnesota had we had a Libertarian governor right now. And that's an important point.
Absolutely. Yep. So, I mean, the money is already flowing very well. And that's actually one of the interesting things also within the state of Minnesota is that things are pretty good. I mean, our economy is fairly healthy. Obviously, that's because we've got some very strong companies. That's nothing that the government of Minnesota has done to make that happen. We are actually rated generally as one of the worst states to do business in. We're the fourth highest personal income tax rate. We're way up on the chain on the corporate income tax rate. We're a very highly regulated economy. But for whatever reason, we've got a very strong functioning economy, which is great. But the downside is that a lot of people think, hey, things are going pretty well. The government must be doing a pretty good job. The fact of the matter is the government could get out of the way and our economy could be booming much, much stronger than it even is right now. But it's one of those things where if you don't feel the pain on a daily basis, people think that there might not be a problem that needs to be fixed. So that's one of our challenges from an informational perspective is let's not look at things aren't that terrible. Let's think about how much better things could be if the government could just keep getting out of our way.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at some of the other – now, what are some of the other areas of libertarian – downsizing, libertarian, reducing the spending and meddling and interference and scope and power. What else is catching on right now in Minnesota among the Libertarian Party or the Libertarian movement?
You know, I would use actually kind of a minor issue that we were working on, and we were working on this with people from other parties as well. So reaching out to some people from the Republican Party, also some of the smaller. So in Minnesota, we basically have two major parties, Republican and the DFL, which is the Democratic Farm Labor. And then we have about five minor parties. And so the five minor parties joined together on, we have Sunday liquor sales are illegal in Minnesota. So a liquor store cannot be open on Sunday. All of our neighboring states are open on Sundays. So kind of the joke is, on Sunday, if you're having a barbecue and you say, hey, it would be nice to have some beer or some wine, there's kind of this traffic jam going across the river to Hudson, Wisconsin to shop in their liquor stores and then bring it back. So again, it's kind of a minor issue. It's not going to change the world. It doesn't change the tax structure. It doesn't change all of the overregulation, but it's kind of exemplary of here is something that really, it was put on the books 100 years ago. It doesn't need to be there. We don't need to be told that you can buy liquor Monday through Saturday, but not on Sunday. And the point isn't that, gosh, we really want to buy liquor on Sunday. It's who needs this rule at all? And so there was a lot of support for that, and the people of the state of Minnesota said, yep, that's a stupid rule, just get rid of it. And it's an example of if laws had sunset clauses on it, it would just go away, and nobody would ever reintroduce it that, hey, we need to make sure that nobody can buy alcohol on Sundays. But it ended up dying in the legislature because there wasn't enough support for it, and actually there was arguments against it by people who run liquor stores that just said, hey, I don't want to be open another day. If we're open on Sunday, that doesn't really add another day of sales. It just spreads the sales over from 6 days to 7 days. So my operating margins get worse. And of course, our response was, you know, you can choose to be open on Sunday or not, but it shouldn't be the government that set that up. But basically the pushback was you're going to hurt small businesses by making them open on another day when they don't need to be open, which of course you can then extrapolate it the other direction and say, well, why don't we make it that it's closed on Tuesdays also? Why don't we push 7 days of sales into 5 days instead of six and those types of things. So again, it's a very small example. And we get a lot of pushback like from people saying, why do you care? I mean, this is Sunday liquor sales. And really it's not a huge thing in the scheme of life, but it's just such a strong example of the government listening to certain groups that are funding them and saying, okay, we've been told that this certain group doesn't want to be open on Sundays. So we're going to keep making it illegal to do that. So, we kind of didn't get that accomplished in this last go round, but we're going to try again for the next round. So,
you know, what's interesting about that is just, you know, and just what you've already mentioned, it's clear that either the liquor store owners are just not super observant or there's something else going on. Because if people are going across the bridge on Sunday, clearly there are Sunday sales happening that are not happening at your liquor store. I mean, this isn't correct. Rocket science over here. And yeah, well, maybe you might spread some of it out, but also there clearly is a market to be captured. You can watch it.
And their pushback was, well, plan ahead and buy on Saturday. But like I said, I mean, the only people that really hurt are the people who have kind of a spontaneous get-together. And again, the pushback is, why do you want to make it so that people can drink more often? And It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with there is just no need for this regulation. And it kind of ties back to, obviously, we've got a push in Minnesota for legalizing marijuana. Actually, I would prefer to refer to that as repealing the prohibition on marijuana, because mm-hmm. we're not legalizing it. We're just removing an artificial law against it. The point of that isn't that we want more people to be able to go get high. If that's what they choose to do, so be it. But you had referenced earlier all of the side effects of that prohibition, you know, militarizing the police, creating a strong drug culture within the gangs. I mean, all the money flows through the underground. It makes it dangerous to go get marijuana where you were going to a dispensary. There would be no danger. So we create all of these problems. We're then tearing up families. We're putting nonviolent people in prison for just making a personal choice. It's not about getting high. It's about all of the damage that we do to families and other, you know, nonviolent people that are doing nothing wrong other than the fact that arbitrarily this one plant has been deemed inappropriate. So that's kind of the messaging that we're trying to get across, is that, you know, we get tagged a little bit of we're trying to legalize marijuana, so we must just want to get high. That's got nothing to do with it. That's a personal choice. Do it or don't. It's all of the negative side effects that come along with these government programs.
And I think that's one of those areas that's such a, to me, such a beautiful example that shows that not only do these problems come about because of government, but if you just shut that thing down, if you just shut down the war on drugs, those problems would also go away basically instantaneously. I mean, if you take away all the profits of cartels, I mean, you take away all those profits that come from violence and illegal activity, you know, drug cartels will just go the way of physical video stores. I mean, they just won't have the finances to continue to exist.
Yeah, and I think that the obvious comparison being to the prohibition of alcohol, 90 years ago, it was dangerous to go get alcohol, and it was run by the mob, and there was a lot of money happening, and there, you know, you see the old movies with people with machine guns running down the street, mowing people down because they're on their turf, all those types of things, and people getting busted for having stills on their private property and all those types of things. And then we re-legalized alcohol, and all those problems went away. Obviously, there's still regulation of alcohol, but it's pretty easy and safe to obtain it and to have it and to consume it. You're responsible for your behavior when you're under the influence of it, and that would be the same thing with marijuana. But it's clear that with alcohol, it was making it illegal is what caused all the problems surrounding it, or the majority of problems. Obviously, there's abuse issues and things like that, but that's going to exist whether it's legal or illegal.
Absolutely.
The prohibition of alcohol didn't work. It created a dangerous structure. It's the exact same thing with the prohibition on marijuana. And again, 70% of the people in the state of Minnesota are for legalization of marijuana, but the people in government don't want to touch that. And specifically, the governor said that the police union doesn't want it legal, so he will veto any progress that people are trying to make with legalization. So he'd rather adhere to what the police union wants than what the people want.
Wow. Chris, let me thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It was great talking with you, and I appreciate everything you're doing to get our message out there. We need all the help we can get. Obviously, we've got great message, and we just need more people to hear it. So I appreciate everything you do.
Absolutely. Guys, if you want to find more about the Libertarian Party of Minnesota, what's that website one more time, Chris?
It is lpmn.org.
lpmn.org. And if you want to get involved in the Libertarian campaign or in Libertarian activism in your state, go to lp.org/states and see how to get involved. You might decide to work on Facebook. You might decide to go door to door. You might even decide to run for office. But that first step is get to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. With me right now is Joe Hauptman. He is the state chair of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Joe, when we look at the situation in Indiana, we've had quite a few candidates from Indiana on the show in the past. What are some of the areas of downsizing government? What are some of the areas that people in Indiana are excited about either reducing the size or the scope or the taxation of government right now?
Well, we've got a problem in Indiana in that our government is basically controlled by probably about a half a dozen committee chairmen. Mm-hmm. And Indiana does not have either referendum or recall. So basically, they're in there. We have supermajority Republican in both the House and the Senate, and we have a Republican governor. And they pretty much can do whatever they want. For the instance, we are the only state in the country that still bans Sunday liquor sales.
Wow.
Even though the majority of everybody except the basically liquor store owners want to have Sunday liquor sales. They like their day off, and they don't want to have to compete with the grocery stores. Mm-hmm. So as a result, even though it passes every time, it just gets killed by the committee chairman. So that's the kind of abuse of power we're facing. We also have straight ticket voting, which means we're one of 13 states where basically you can pull one lever, and that votes for all of one party all the way down. And that counts for about two-thirds of the votes cast in the state.
Wow. It's interesting that you're in a state that is entirely Republican-controlled, because this is what we hear from the Republicans. The Republicans are always saying, listen, if we just didn't have to deal with the Democrats, we could, you know, we wouldn't have to have a minimum wage. But does Indiana have a minimum wage?
We have a minimum wage, although we have just done away with what is a community wage, which is the idea that on government contracts, they basically get a little higher based on the cost of living in the area. We have become a right-to-work state.
Mm-hmm.
And we also went through a gutting of, and this is where I stand, probably a little different from most libertarians. I've taught for 23 years. Mm-hmm. Basically, they, under the guise of education reform, basically gutted all rights teachers had into any kind of collective bargaining. So
now,
we followed that pattern.
Now, I just want to go back to the minimum wage thing for a sec. What right now? I mean, as libertarians, we recognize that any minimum wage reduces opportunity. I mean, that's something that libertarians seem to by and large usually agree on. And even most Republican voters at least recognize this fact. And we can assume that somebody's probably told the Republican politicians, whether they've chosen to listen or not. You know, it's up to them. But it's this idea that these things that libertarians dislike, each party tries to pass off to the other party. Democrats say, well, we would end the war on drugs if it wasn't for the Republicans blocking us. And Republicans would say that, you know, we would get rid of things like minimum wage and all that if it wasn't for the Democrats blocking us. But we do have a case study right here that shows that even without Democrats blocking anything, you know, Republicans still do plenty of things that are, you know, traditionally, quote, Democratic and statist and problematic.
Oh, absolutely. Indiana is a perfect example of the difference between free markets and crony capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are a poster child for crony capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about privatizing prisons. What that means is we have private prisons where we have contracts that if we do not provide them with X number of prisoners, we pay a penalty to them. So basically, the state has an incentive to make sure they arrest enough people to keep the private prisons full.
And that means that there's no, that means now we have the, instead of an incentive to have as few people in jail as possible, which would be the goal of any well-functioning society, now the goal is to have more people in jail, which is the goal of no one on earth ever except for the private prisons.
Exactly. Exactly. That is what's happened in this state with crony capitalism. We just had a law passed in Indiana, which basically, if it's held up to constitutional scrutiny, which is questionable, will gut the entire vaping industry. And we know that this was done basically at the request of a single large donor, okay, and not tobacco, by the way, who basically wants to have a monopoly on the making of the juices. And they basically, if this goes into effect, it'll put out somewhere between 200 and 500 small businesses out of business in the state, make it illegal for you to make your own juices. It'll be worse than alcohol, and puts in security requirements that it's actually easier, takes less security to make ammunition in the state of Indiana than it would to make basically the fluids used in vaping.
Wow.
And this is all done basically because of crony capitalism. I mean, under the guise of, quote, protecting the consumer.
And that's right there what we're talking about. We're talking about if when people say, like, you know, what are libertarians going to do, or why can't we just vote for Republicans and get the same result? This is why. Because Republicans, because they still encourage that big government mindset, instead of doing government stuff, they do crony capitalism. It's not that it's any better. It's just as bad. It's still corruption. It's just a slightly different kind of corruption. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Ed Crane once spoke at the National Convention, and he explained it pretty well, in my opinion. He said there's really only one party in this country, and that's the party of the incumbency.
Mm-hmm.
And they have two subgroups, sort of like the shirts and the skins for scrimmaging. But with the exception of when somebody retires, basically everything is just about maintaining the status quo and make sure the people in power basically optimize their return. We're the only opposition. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's really just, I'm afraid to say in Indiana, for many of the leadership, I'm not saying you know, rank and file Republican or Democrat, it's basically which gang you want to get into to split up the loot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, if you tend to be rural, you tend to tend towards the Republican gang. If you're urban, you tend to tend towards the Democrat gang. But beyond that, it's the same. There's no ideology left in it.
Mm-hmm.
It really is nothing more than two gangs trying to decide who gets the loot.
And I think that's exactly right. And we see the same thing across the country and the same thing over here in Maryland and every state. We just basically see Democrats and Republicans finding excuses to take more money and either give it to themselves or give it to their cronies. That's all that's going on. And we are, as you said, the only group that's not doing that. And why are we not doing that? Because our goal is to downsize government. Our goal is for there to be less government, less taxes. Our goal is to make government so small that it cannot even do crony capitalism. It doesn't have the resources for crony capitalism. Now, what are some of the other areas in Indiana right now that are catching on, that are catching fire?
Well, actually, what we're working in Indiana is a strategy, and you'll be able to tell us either it was brilliant or you idiots after the 2016 election, of working with what we call allies of interest.
Okay.
For instance, we're working with more closely with the established marijuana groups. We're working with the vaping industry. We're trying to set up connections with the privacy groups, And the idea is not to try to get them all to work together, okay, but to basically find those issues where we can sort of be the insulator and pick out some really bad reps, which isn't hard in this state, and basically go after them. You know, and basically say to these people, is your right to medical marijuana worth one vote? Okay. Is your right to having a control over vaping worth one vote? Okay. Is your right to not have a militarized police force worth one vote? And see if we can't take all these one votes and focus them. Because we've always had the problem in this state, we're pretty well established. We've had ballot status, we have to maintain it every 4 years, since 1994. And the Republicans love to come to us and say, you cost us three seats. And our response traditionally has been, well, we pull as much from the Democrats as the Republicans. Okay, my goal in 16 is to have them come and say, you cost us these five seats, and I want to be able to look them in the eye and go, yep, and I'm going to cost you 10 next time.
And the thing is, the way to, if there are Republicans listening right now, beating Libertarian Party is not that hard. If you want to make sure the Libertarian Party can't do anything, just cut government. Cut some government somewhere and then cut some more government somewhere else and keep cutting government. It's not that hard to get rid of us. If you cut government, there's nothing for us to do because that's all we're trying to do over here.
Absolutely. That's what makes us a little different from the other parties is winning. Personally believe, having been at this for 30 years, that we won't succeed until we elect libertarians. But if we succeed by having the Republicans cut government or the Democrats cut government, that's fine with me.
Absolutely.
I've yet to meet a libertarian who looks forward to actually winning.
Okay? Absolutely. Our goal is real simple.
Yeah. The joke in Indiana is every libertarian candidate has a standard emergency acceptance speech, and it says, I demand a recount.
And I think, there is some truth to the idea that we can, if we can do this by pressuring other people, awesome. And if we can do it by getting elected, awesome. Whatever it takes to downsize government, let's do that. Let's actually talk a little bit more about some of these issues in Indiana right after this break. If people want to get involved and find more out about the Libertarian Party of Indiana, where should they go?
LPIN.org.
Okay, LPIN.org.
Yep.
Now, in order to get involved in the Libertarian Party, the first place you go is you got to get to your state. If you're in Indiana, go to LPIN.org. If you're in another state, just go to LP.org/states. Just contact your state chair, contact the state executive board. They're going to find ways to use your skills to help downsize government. But they can't do it themselves. You got to get there. You got to make that first step. You got to reach out and go to LP.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on Earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Right now, we're talking with the state chair of Indiana, Joe Hauptmann, and we're going to talk a little bit more about different ways that Indianans are working to just downsize government, find ways to get less regulation, less taxation, and less meddling. Joe, what are some of the other areas that are just catching on right now in Indiana? When you talk to people in the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian movement, what are some of the parts of government that they're especially excited to downsize?
Well, one of the problems everyone in the country is having is the militarization of the police and the use of the police as income generators. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you're the biggest police fan in the world. When you see the cops being basically used as a revenue source, it usually boils your blood. Mm-hmm. Because there was a time when a police officer was a peace officer. Yeah. The job was to maintain the peace. And now they are law enforcement officers, which is a whole different emphasis. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a lot of people that are really interested in getting the police back on the track of not just trying to generate revenue, either through asset forfeiture or basically just we've got some problems in some of our richer suburbs of, you know, driving while black. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a lot of people interested in that. We've got one county that is actually working to raise money for the police department to buy them cams, the videos, video camera vests, because the police department says, well, we just can't afford them. Mm-hmm. And so they're actually going to raise the money among businessmen to get the cameras for the police and present them with the cameras.
And what are some of the advantages of doing that? I mean, you know, how does that help, you know, the people in Minnesota?
It helps the people, in my opinion. Again, I'm 62, and mm-hmm. police abuse has always happened. You know, I had friends killed by the police back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. They ruled it was self-defense, but the bullet went through the back of his head and the back of the windshield. This is nothing new. But in those days, the only people who knew about it were the local people, mm-hmm. people directly involved. The cam phones, the cell phones are letting the general population now know about mm-hmm. the abuses. Now, it also helps the police because, let's be honest, not everyone's a sweet, lovable person like you and me. it helps for the people to know what the policemen are dealing with. Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, it's a win-win for both sides. The only thing where we would get involved, for instance, is if this goes down, and it's in the process. I mean, they are already raising the funds. We would probably propose a law through our candidates that would basically say if a camera is put either broken or turned off during a confrontation that is in dispute, then the burden of proof moves to the police. In other words, it is assumed that the non-police person is telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to have a reason for them not to say, just excuse me, turn off the camera before I beat the crap out of you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that would be I could see the argument in favor of that, but go ahead.
Another technique we're planning to use during the campaign, and I used this back in 98 when I ran for Congress, mm-hmm. is, as you know, the majority of people, even in Indiana, support medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. This is being, controlled by a half a dozen people who don't want it to come into play. So what I expect our candidates to do, and we're not forcing them, because we're libertarians, our candidates do what they do, is our candidates are running on ending the drug war, period. Okay, mm-hmm. It's a war on our freedoms, it's a war on our citizens, okay? It is obscene, but the position is we as libertarians want to end the drug war, but if you cannot bring yourself to end this obscene drug war, the least you can do is let the wounded off the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
the least you can do is go for medical marijuana, which we don't have in the state. And we have a Democrat state senator who has introduced a bill for medical marijuana. And our candidates are going to take the position. And not only that, a candidate would say, I will put in writing today that if I'm elected, I will vote for this bill. And further, I call on the incumbent and my Democrat opponent to sign the same pledge or explain to the voters why they won't.
And I think right there is the difference, because that is a pledge for not just some vague hint that we might like the idea, but that hard pledge that says, yeah, I'm going to do what it takes to legalize, to end this marijuana prohibition, to end the war on drugs. I'm going to sign my name to this action, not just talk about this theoretical ideology. That's what we saw in the Obama campaign, when on one side, Obama was happy to admit that he himself has done marijuana, but then once elected, didn't do anything to legalize it or decriminalize it or do anything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We've had races in Indiana for governor where the only person who has not used drugs and admitted to it publicly was the Libertarian.
And see, that's the thing. I mean, if you've used marijuana, then the question you have to ask, you know, does that person think that his life would be better if he'd been locked up for 20 years for no good reason? Or had
his
house stormed by, you know, police stormtroopers, basically. I mean, is that really what they think the right idea is? Or do they think that they're in some separate protected special group that doesn't need to follow the same rules as the rest of civilized society?
Oh, they think they're in a special group. And I live in one of the richer areas of Indiana. I know you on the East Coast wouldn't view us rich, but for around here we do. And I know, having been a school teacher, of people whose futures were totally destroyed because they got picked up. I have one former student was picked up for less than an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but because it was her second offense in Indiana, that's an automatic felony.
Wow.
So in Indiana, basically now this young woman can never go into the finance field. She cannot get life insurance. Basically, a whole career paths are now destroyed for her. Okay, and that's the kind of arguments we're going to be using in the suburbs when we're talking about ending the drug war. Okay, you're not going to convince a lot of people that, yes, your kid has a God-given right to get high.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about this stupid law, okay, besides oppressing minorities, okay, can make your kid basically unable to get into the most lucrative fields in the country, okay, just because he happened to be, or she happened to be the one who was there when the police decided, oh, I need two more bus for the night. Okay, that's how you sell it to them.
Absolutely. Joe, let me thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today and to share some of these experiences and ideas about what's going on in the libertarian movement and Libertarian Party in Indiana.
Well, I'm glad to have the chance, and anytime you want anyone from here in Indiana up on your show, just let us know. We'll be glad to help you out.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Guys, right now we just finished talking with Joe Hauptmann. He's a state chair of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. That website is lpin.org. State chairs like Joe and Chris are some of the hardest working people in the entire party. They're the ones that help organize so many different campaigns, so many alliances that work to downsize government. But they can't do it by themselves. They need your help. You can go right now to lp.org/states and see how to get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. You might decide to work on social media. You might decide to run for office and make the biggest possible contribution that you can possibly make to the cause of liberty. And let's think about what that means. That means long term, you're talking about saving money. You're talking about saving lives. You're talking about improving people's lives by preventing them from being locked up for no good reason. But that first step is going to lp.org/states. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You.
Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.